That's much better now. Okay, I think everyone who should be on the call is on the call. I think we should make a start. With some luck, I think we'll get through this meeting in less than the 2 hours that I'd asked you to allocate. Firstly, Christina, for the record, can you just tell us who is on the call?
Yes. Do you want me to go through the apologies as well?
Yes, please.
Yeah. On the call, we have Kim, Paulos, Bart, Keith, Dottie, Yap, Bill, Alione, Patricio, Bernie, and me, Christina. Did I miss anyone? Okay. Apologies. I have Annabeth, Oscar, Vika, Suzanne, Chris, Nigel, and Eberhard.
Okay. Hopefully everyone's following the progress through the updates on the list. But on the last call, we discussed the document that's in front of us on Adobe Connect in quite some detail. And those who were on the call asked if Bernie would continue developing the analysis for the rest of the issues that we'd highlighted. I think the only point of some debate was the issue over both Eberhard. Both Eberhard and Nigel Roberts commenting that their desire to have the initial authority of ICANN recognised in the document, and I think in the last few hours there's been a bit of commentary on the list with Nigel actually coming up with what I thought was some outstanding concise wording to catch that. So notwithstanding that, I guess the best thing we can do this evening is have Bernie walk through probably more the changes in the document, but highlighting or perhaps responding to questions on the way through from anyone who wasn't on the last week's call. So, Bernie, over to you.
Thank you, Keith. Basically, what I'm proposing to do is I'll try to go through the... first, let's make sure. Does everyone hear me properly?
Very clearly, Ben.
Great. So what I'll propose to do is I'll go through the parts we covered last week quickly. And I'll spend a bit more time on the parts that are new. And I'll be walking through the document on Adobe Connect. And if you don't have access and you get lost, do let me know, and we'll try to sync you up again. So, moving right along. So, we've redone the introduction a bit. I don't think there's anything new in there. It's been stuff that's been taken from other documents, except for this very last paragraph here, which we call it the Eberhard Clause, and basically addresses what Eberhard's been talking about. Now, as Keith has pointed out, I think once Eberhard actually found the paragraph, he sort of liked it, and Nigel got into it. And so there'll be some wordsmithing, but the general idea on authority is covered here, and I guess we'll be hammering something out to both Eberhard and Nigel's satisfaction so it can be presented to the group to see if it's okay. Was that Patricio?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It is in this paragraph where Eberhard was proposing to add one word. In addition to delegations and redelegations, he was proposing to add the word registrations. So, in fact, introducing a new kind of CLDs that in addition to those that were delegated, so there would be CLDs that had been registered. And my comment that I sent a few minutes ago to the list was that I think we should analyze the impact of that change before deciding whether to adopt it or not.
Yes, and I agree with you. I think before we change what we've got there, we'll be looking at it and making sure that it's sensible.
Yeah. Basically, I guess the intent of that is, I suppose that's why Eberhard is proposing to add it, is that if there are, for those TLDs that were delegated by IANA, then IANA could re-delegate them. But if a TLD was not delegated, but instead it was registered by the manager, presumably in those cases, IANA would not have authority to re-delegate.
Yes, I fully understand.
Yep.
Bill, do you have a question? You have to unmute.
I'm muted. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All right. I think I raised it several times, and I guess I'm going to raise it more strongly today as a statement of fact. We actually do have a copy of the handwritten notes to a printout of the email template that IUSN submitted in 1997, the notes being checkoffs of the requirements of RFC 1591 as shown, you know, by their due diligence or research or whatever on the template. And I think if you back up where your little green arrow was on the display there, we're right there. We do have what I would say a useful document disclosing reasoning for the decision on .nu.
Okay, but I haven't seen that, Bill, is all.
I understand, but I'm telling you that now because here you say it's, what's the word you use? I lost it. It's somewhere in here about people having
the second line. Not at this stage uncovered any useful documents disclosing reasoning for decisions or the decision-making process.
Yeah. But in fact, we have this document, and I'm just telling you on record we have it. And rather than, I mean, if you want to wait to change this language till I send you a copy, that's fine. But if I were in a court of law, I would state under oath that this document exists.
Well, I don't think we're there at all. If you can scan it and send it around the group, I'm sure everyone would love to see it.
Okay.
Okay.
And I think that would be a very useful addition to the records, but I think the issue, Bill, is that there's not we haven't seen a substantial amount of documentation, although there were a reasonably substantial number of delegations and some redelegations prior to ICANN's formation. So I think what we're saying there in some ways is that it's a little difficult to address all of those issues in the shorter term, and the importance of this paragraph is that we shouldn't lose sight of those issues, and if those issues are picked up for further work later on, but if we can progress the issues that we are able to get moving on with ICANN, that would probably be more useful. So I think, you know, I can see us splitting into two streams of work as we go forward.
Well, the important issue for me is that this is an indication on paper that IANA was following RFC 1591 and documenting it as it went along, as opposed to just making shoot-from-the-hip, knee-jerk decisions based on who's a friend of John's.
Yeah, but and so we have one document that appears to categorically state that, but it would be nice to have an audit trail of several to verify that that is the case.
And I will say I'm really surprised that IANA doesn't have those records, because this particular document came from Louis Tutton in 2000 when ICON existed. We got this copy from Louis's office. So if it was in the file in the ICON attorney, corporate counsel's office, one would think that other similar records existed.
We'll move them out.
Someone should mute there.
Yes.
And it might be that that's where these things are, in the office of the legal counsel and not in IANA. I don't know. Someone at ICON or on staff could contact Louis and see if he recollects where these things were kept.
Sorry, just clarification, I couldn't hear due to a siren on my end, but clarify where the location of what exactly?
Records of the printouts of the authoritative delegations of domains by IANA prior to ICON, similar to the one to the copy that was sent to us by Louis Tutton in 2000.
Well, so I mean, those what records we have are with IANA in my department.
But you said you didn't have my record. You said you didn't have the IUSN record.
I'll have to check what we have. For you specifically, off the top of my head, I couldn't say, but
well, that's
I would say
what
that
I'm
we don't
saying.
Have the
if
same.
I believed and perhaps misunderstood what you were saying, but previously I thought you said, well, we don't have that record. And since I have it and I got it from Louis Tutton, one would think that someone must have it. So if now you say, well, I'll have to go look back and look in the file and see if I have it, I'm kind of suggesting maybe you should look in the same file where that might be and look what else is there.
So I don't think I've specifically commented on any TLD in this working group, because I've definitely tried to avoid that. But,
okay, understood.
I would say that the records that we have prior to ICANN performing the function are very scant, and they're not, I mean, for some TLDs we have absolutely nothing. For some TLDs we have maybe one piece of paper. Some TLDs we have 50 sheets of paper. I mean, it's highly variable, but it's definitely not consistent. That's the general summation of it. And for each TLD is different. I can't say.
That. I guess from my point of view as a member of the working group, I would like to, unless you think there's a confidentiality issue, which I doubt, I think we should be able to get a copy of all those files and determine where the lack of consistency is and whether it's relevant, or where there is consistency and whether it's relevant. And I'm not talking about pre-RFC 1591 or anything. I'm talking about, you know, decisions made under RFC 1591. There is this sort of Internet myth that all delegations prior to ICON were just John and his friends. And that's not the case. Certainly wasn't the case in IUSN. And I think it would be helpful for us to show, if at all possible, what the reasoning was at the time and how the policy was or was not applied.
Yep, I think that's not unreasonable, Bill, and I think that's work that we should endeavour to do. However, what we have been able to research are the ICANN board decisions that have been straightforwardly minuted in the interim. So, I think we should progress that work, but we mustn't lose sight of the historical aspects. And if we can find more details and get our hands on things like the papers you have, that would be very, very helpful.
Okay, I won't belabor it anymore. I keep making this point, and I think, although one might think of it as history, it is, in fact, the basis under which all the delegations have happened except the contracts. And that what I mean by that is RFC 1591. And therefore, it would be helpful if we could see any evidence at all that shows how the pure RFC 1591 process worked prior to the board coming in and, you know, creating its own varied interpretations. And if there is any evidence of that that shows a reasonably consistent application of RFC 1591 or not, then I think we should have that as part of the record. And rather than just depend on board votes, which were interpreting something, something that many of us have already been assigned a delegation under, discounting any kind of subsequent board action. So I've taken up enough time. Let's move on.
Okay, but noted. Thanks, Bill. Carry on, Benny.
All right. We're back. I think this section of the document, which, just to catch up for those that have lost, sorry, we're still in the new introduction, and all of that stuff is fairly straightforward and understood. I'm going to skip over the... sorry. My link is a little slow here. On the section, it's called Classifying Issues. We've gone through that several times, and basically it's the methodology for analyzing the decisions. And the table sort of summarizes this. If it's an issue related to policy, if it significantly fails to meet the requirements, it should be significantly interesting. If it fails to meet some of the requirements for creating a policy, it should be classified as interesting. And if it's possibly, if it meets most or all of the requirements, it's only possibly interesting. So unless there's a request, I'm going to move ahead on this one rather quickly. Is that okay with everyone? I'll take that as a yes. So we're going to scroll down quickly. There's a methodology, and then there are two annexes, which basically say how do we figure out if it was a policy decision or not. And the second annex talks about the rules have evolved over time and what rules are applicable at what time.
Christina and Kate, unfortunately, I have now a meeting, and I will see the report in the internet.
Thank you.
These are you. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, last week we went over, I believe it was 8 decisions. The first one, based on the methodology, was picking off one of the elements when comparing ICP-1 to RFC 1591, which is item 102 in the original comparison document. And basically, we talked about the fact that there was seemingly some additional language. So it was worthwhile to go through the analysis, change of policy or application of policy, and basically the evaluation in 1.3. And the conclusion is always in 1.3 in the first section, is that this implicit decision by the board meets the 4 criteria to classify it as a policy-type decision. Then we look at the meet the requirements, and that there were there was nothing done to meet the requirements, so that the working group could classify this as significantly interesting. And of course, there's the note that says, you know, this document started out by saying there was no policy changes, and if we accept this evaluation, it sort of throws a wrench into that a bit. Are there any questions on this one? Okay, I'll take that as a no. We'll move on to the next one. The ISO 3166 reserved list decision. And just to help you navigate the document, if you go back to it, what I've done is the header in each section basically is the name of the decision with the date, and the footer talks about what section you're actually in the number. So we went through this in fair amount of detail last week, and basically the conclusion on this one was that in 1.3, meets all the criteria to be classified as a policy type decision, and the evaluation if it followed procedure was that didn't follow anything, basically just got announced. So it could be classified as significantly interesting by the working group without too much arguing about it. Then I bring up the fact that basically, although this decision came a little while after ICP-1, ICP-1 was never changed, which, you know, basically causes the CCs and the working group concern, because if we basically understand that these are policy changes, then afterwards, including quite a bit after this decision, I'm talking about the 2003 .KY decision, we're not referring to the fact that there were other policy decisions. We're still saying RFC 1591 and ICP-1 are the policies, and that's it. So it does cause a bit of concern around those things. When it's, I feel that it's quite relevant, what I've done is in an annex to the analysis, I've included the board minutes from the website, and in this case, I have done so. And we're just going to scroll to the bottom of that one, because the minutes as opposed to today were quite conspicuous, or copious, I should say, on this particular decision. And I would highly recommend that you read those, or even if you read them in the past, it's interesting if you've been participating in the working group, to reread these minutes after the work we've been doing. I found it quite interesting. So that would complete adding the ISO reserve list to being potential CCTLDs. Any questions on that decision, on that analysis, sorry? Okay. After that, Section 3, sponsorship agreement decision from September 25th, 2000, basically, which begat sponsorship agreements or contracts between CCTLDs. Is it a change of policy or an application of policy? So you've got the basic facts there as we went through it last week. And we conclude in 1.3 that it meets the four criteria to be a change of policy, and then we look at did it meet the requirements. Now, the reality is that in 2000, the requirements for policy development were not what they are today. They were considerably less. Basically, there were 3 points. Provide public notice on the website explaining what policies are being considered for adoption and why. Provide a reasonable opportunity for parties to comment on the adoption of the proposed policies, and hold a public forum at which the proposed policy would be discussed. So definitely there are very clear public records of the draft sponsorship agreements being published. Of course, if you take the time to go through everything, you note that, there's a very thin record of email participation, which maybe that people didn't write in. The consultation process in ICANN evolved quite a bit since then. And secondly, the input that was provided at any kind of meetings, and certainly for those of us who were at the Montevideo meeting where the sponsorship agreements were presented, even without the expletives that were presented during that presentation, contained quite a bit of feedback from the CCTLDs, and there's no record of that anywhere. This was during what I call the period of unless people wanted to make negative comments, were very serious and determined and forced ICANN's hand, there were really not a lot of records kept of any negative comments that were provided. So at any rate, the conclusion in 2.5, did it meet the requirements? We can say that it failed to meet some of the requirements and that it could be classified as interesting by the ARD, by the working group, but we certainly can't say that it failed to meet most or all of the policy requirements. This thing was discussed to death, and basically that's the reality of this one.
Beanie, I think the issue on
terribly
on
that. Yes, sir?
The issue on that, though, is that you know, the lack of recording of the negative discussion is kind of concerning, because for any historian reading back who didn't experience those years, it appears there was little or no dissent. And but I guess that's a separate issue. That's not an argument about whether it was within policy or not. It's more a question about ICANN's accountability and transparency.
Yes, which is why I simply put a note to sort of record that fact. But it's, as I say, for those of us who were there and remember the discussions, for me, the impression it left, to be polite, is that, as I said, negative comments tended to not be recorded by ICANN unless they were formally written and transmitted to ICANN as part of a formal consultation process, in which case they would actually post them. But what's actually interesting is even if they were posted, they were never referred to. But it was another era. Things were starting up. Things have changed in that department considerably, so I think it's an interesting historical fact, but maybe nothing more. Getting back, we've got some of the information in the annex relative to the GAC principles concerning the communications between ICANN and the delegee, and I thought that was worthwhile reading, and I have provided that. Are there any questions on Section 3? Okay, Section 4, which we covered last week, is the first redelegation with sponsorship agreement, which, of course, was .au. I have not gone through every single one that was done. Well, let me be clear. I have analyzed separately every single delegation, redelegation, and retirement decision. In this document, I did not think it would bring a lot to go through each one of these separately. I thought the .au was one of the better examples of this, and basically am presenting this one. So basically what we've got here, change of policy or application of policy, based on the sponsorship agreement decision that was the previous one we've been analyzed. And so it's fairly clearly an application of policy. And then we go to analyzing that it meet the requirements for application of policy within, and there's two things we look at, basically, that it meet the requirements within the policy itself, and that it meet any general requirements of the corporation relative to applying policies. Again, in these early days, given this decision is from September 10th, 2001, there wasn't a lot from a corporate point of view about how to go about implementing policies. As Nigel has pointed out on the list, there is a general common law requirement that corporations apply their policies fairly and evenly, but there is no formal statement related to these things. So basically, just from the going through the motions of analyzing this thing, we basically conclude that all the critical elements of the decision being considered are clearly and directly supported by the policy or policies that are applicable. So the conclusion is that the working group would be justified in classifying this as potentially interesting, which is the low end of the scale. There are two related issues which are interesting in this analysis. 251 of Section 4, the decision can be classified as the first redelegation that was not approved by the existing administrative contact under ICT-1. The working group considered this as significant and worthy of formal analysis, so we'll do that in the next part. The sponsorship agreement approved by the board, there is the issue of no longer allowing individuals to be delegates of the CCTLD. This sort of got slipped in the while the sponsorship agreements were being covered. And after looking at this upside, downside, and around, it seemed that it was worthy to sort of take a crack at analyzing that one, too, and those will be the next two decisions we'll have a look at. So that's the conclusion of Section 4. Are there any questions here? Okay. Moving on to Section 5, redelegation without admin contact support. This is new. This was not included last week. After our discussions last week, Eberhard made the point, and I thought it was fair. And so basically gathered up all the information, and we went through the analysis.
Sorry, Bernie, I've had a question with my little hand up on Adobe, but...
Oh, sorry, I'm just concentrating on the document. I see that. I'm very sorry, Bill. Yes, sir.
That's okay, not a problem. And it's partly question, partly more sort of a general observation with the concept of the board setting policy. And I know we've gotten to this position over the last, I'll say, 1.5 phone conferences somewhere along the way. But I really doubt or strongly question whether the board has ever authoritatively, independently been setting policy for CCTLDs, but instead perhaps been directing IANA on actions to take with respect to CCTLDs in its own sort of attempt to interpret the policy RFC 1591/ICP1. And so it may be that this is a path that would be non-productive from my point of view to pursue, in that we there's no prima facie evidence that the board had the authority to change RFC 1591 policies. And so for us to say every time the board has voted on a redelegation and used some decision-making factor which veered from what one might think was the existing policy, for us to say that that's a change in policy, I think might be premature or even handing more power to the board than they actually have had all this time. So I'm raising the question, and again, if people just want to note it and move on, that's fine, but I'm raising the question as to whether the board has ever even had the authority to set policy for CCTLDs insofar as the IANA contract gives that redelegation activity role to IANA and not to the board. Enough said, I guess, but unless people have responses they'd like to make, but I'm not trying to slow the process down.
Yeah, no, that's a fair comment, Bill, and one that I think even if you go back to Peter Dengate Thrush's presentation at the Nairobi ICANN meeting, where he states categorically that the only place for the development of policy relating to delegations and redelegations of CCTLDs comes from within the CCNSO. It's an exclusive ability they have, and I think the issue here is that the board has been able to apply some interpretations of policy along the way, and without any dissent from the CCNSO, have been able to continue to stretch those interpretations of policy. So I think in a way, each of the decisions and comments in this document sort of bring us back to that point quite solidly. And at the end of the day, if probably this working group will have no option but to recommend the PDP to actually clarify, and whether that PDP goes back and says 1591 is the sole authority, or whether we try and develop new policies, I guess is a question for the CCNSO going forwards. But certainly the point's noted.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? I don't see any little hands. Okay. So that was Section 4. Section 5, redelegation without admin contact support. Okay, so basically it's still the OUTA decision, and we'll be looking at it from the point of view of a redelegation being carried out without approval of the current admin contact. Certainly the first documented case under ICP1. So, change of policy or application of policy, point one, standard approach. RFC 1591 clearly allows for redelegation without the consent of the current admin contact, and we've got the three reasons here. ICP1, quite similarly. And under the GAC principles, very clearly, where the ultimate public policy authority over relevant CCTLD rests with the relevant government. So basically, whether you consider just RFC 1591 or all of the documents and the history, there is basically policy in place that supports classifying this as an application of policy under 1.3. So then the next step is, as a policy application issue, that it meet the requirements. Date of the decision is still September 10th, 2001. There is no specific directive in the bylaws concerning how the board should apply policies. We'll go through the applicable policies again, and basically we pick off the ones that are very applicable in this case. And then we do go through the analysis. And basically what we end up with is that all of the critical elements of the decision being considered are supported by the policy or policies that are applicable and supports the working group classifying this as potentially interesting. Basically, I think this has been of concern within our circles for a number of years, but the reality when you go through this decision fairly mechanically relative to the rules that are there, you know, RFC 1591, on a few occasions the parties involved have not been able to reach an agreement and the IANA has been required to resolve the matter. It's usually a long drawn out process leaving at least one party unhappy. So you know, that's the reality of the thing. And there was a formal redelegation request. The current administrative contact, Robert Ells, did not approve it. All parties were given ample time to resolve the situation. It did not resolve. The local government formally endorsed the redelegation and actually brought in some legislation. And eventually IANA just tried to get a final agreement from Mr. Ells that did not work, and IANA made the decision. And it seems, according to what we've got here, to be supported by policy. That would be Section 5. Are there any questions on this one? Okay. Section 6, not allowing individuals as delegees for CCTLDs. We had this one last week. And basically, change of policy or application of policy, and the conclusion on this one in 1.3 is that this decision by the board meets the four criteria from the decision tree and supports classifying the decision as a change in policy. So the working group should be able to classify this as a change in policy if it so desires. Did it meet the requirements for policy development? We'll take the date of September 10th. It doesn't really change anything whether it was the date of consultations on the sponsorship agreements or the date of the .au decision. And basically, what we're seeing here is there was never any formal documents or mention in any of the formal documents that this would no longer be allowed, meaning individuals as delegates for CCTLDs. If you look at it very specifically in the draft, it's obvious. Yes, it does come out. But there was never any notice in any communication by IANA at the time that this was being shifted. And what makes this more interesting is that really the terms, if you go back up a bit, I believe we've got that, in 12211, the use of the word organization, manager, authorities, they're all used interchangeably in RFC 1591 and ICP-1. So I think there was really a burden on ICANN to say clearly to the public when it was presenting these draft agreements that we're not allowing this anymore. However, the documents were published, there were discussions, so I guess the conclusion that we've got here is that given it failed to meet some of the requirements for policy development, this should be classified as interesting. This justified to support, to classify this as interesting by the working group. And that would bring to a conclusion Section 6. Are there any questions? Okay, moving right along. Section 7, the .ly redelegation, June 9th, 2004. If you haven't caught on to this, I'm sorry I haven't mentioned it before. Basically, all the decisions we're going through are chronological. So basically, the dates keep increasing as we go through them. Originally, in a previous version, we classified them in another scheme, and after looking at it, I think everyone agreed it made more sense to look at it purely chronologically. All right, what was the .ly decision? To allow a provisional redelegation of the .ly domain. Now, this was the first time that a provisional delegation was ever mentioned. It was also the last time, but so be it. It was the resolution as such. Let's have a look at it. Change of policy or application of policy. There is no mention anywhere, either in RFC 1591, ICP-1, or the GAC principles, that there is such a thing as a provisional redelegation. And it's obviously not just an additional word thrown in there. There are implications that this is not a standard redelegation, but it modifies the powers of the delegee. So there's a note sort of discussing this in 1.31 in the conclusion. And basically what we're saying is this explicit decision by the board meets the four criteria from the decision tree and supports classifying the decision as a change in policy. So if we agree it's a change in policy, that it meet the requirements in effect at the time. Well, now there's a bit of a change because we're talking about June 29, 2004. The CCNSO is there, and we've got some new bylaws. Basically, we've still got the old notice provisions that we read out originally. Now we also have the core values, and there are three of them that are particularly relevant to developing policies for the CCNSO. Number four, seeking and supporting broad informed participation reflecting the functional, geographic, and cultural diversity of the Internet at all levels of policy development and decision-making. So I think that's kind of clear. Number seven, in the core values, employing open and transparent policy development mechanisms that, one, promote well-informed decisions based on expert advice, and two, ensure that those entities most affected can assist in the policy development process. Finally, section nine in the core values, acting with a speed that is responsive to the needs of the Internet while, as part of the decision-making process, obtaining informed input from those entities most affected, which is basically the escape clause. If you can't do a really good job of policymaking, but if you're going to make policy exceptions, then you have to get informed input from those that are being affected. And basically, because the CCNSO is in place, and as Keith has pointed out, that our friend Peter Dengue-Trush pointed out in our Ruby meeting, any changes to policies affecting CCTLDs will come from the CCNSO. So you take all of that, and you have a look and perform an evaluation. So there's obviously no record of a CCNSO PDP on provisional redelegation. There's no record of any type of any public consultation. There's no public record that there was any public forum. There's no record that ICANN sought any broad informed participation. There was no policy development process. There's no record of obtaining any informed input from those parties most affected, the CCTLDs, and there is no record of an IANA report to support the decision. Which is the first, by the way, for a redelegation actually being carried out. So given this decision can be classified as a policy change, it failed to meet all of the requirements for policy development in effect at the time. It supports the classification of this decision as significantly interesting by the working group. And then I've got the note in 2.4 regarding the lack of an IANA report. I'm just pointing out that it's uncertain what there was or what there was not because there are no board minutes. This was during that great dark period. So we're not sure if there was an IANA report, but it doesn't seem to be referred to anywhere, and it's not on the IANA reports list. It was for the full redelegation a few months later of .ly, and we're uncertain if that was the same report that was used, but it's not referred to.
But Bernie, just before you get off that subject, I wonder, that wording might be a little bit harsh, and perhaps in 2.4 should say something like the CCTLD redelegation being completed without any visibility of an IANA report.
I have no problem. I'm just trying to mention it. I was not trying to be harsh, so we can adjust that.
Okay.
Any other questions on Section 7 before we move on? Okay. Section 8.EU delegation, March 21st, 2005. Basically, we went through the motions of analyzing the decision, given it was the first decision regarding the ISO 3166 reserve list. Of course, it's not a change in policy because the ISO reserve list decision from September 2000 covered this. And if you look at the application of policy, then the conclusion is that all the critical elements being considered clearly and directly supported by the policy or policies that are applicable at the time, the decision being classified as potentially interesting by the working group. So basically, there's no surprises there if you accept the fact that the September 2000 decision with respect to the ISO reserved list made policy, then this was a clear place of applying that policy. Yap, I see your little hand up. Do you wish to comment? I don't have any sound from Adobe Connect, and I'm not getting anything from the phone bridge. Maybe you're muted. Okay, I'm not getting anything. You have a comment.
If finds the unmute button, he can shout it when he can.
I got a few words, Yap, and then you went quiet again.
Okay. Well, I'll try it again.
Okay, it sounds better.
Okay, I'm yelling now. It's at 2.222, I mean, just scrolled from the screen, there it is. It says that it has been reserved to include use as TLD. I think the last part is incorrect. It doesn't really say why this decision of the maintenance agency. It basically says for the use of the territory of the EU. And it's especially done on advice on request of the work group 4127, if I remember correctly. And because that's the one which standardizes the valuta in the world. And they needed some escape hook for the euro, because it's not tied to a real country.
Yeah, I found that interesting, but I pulled that off as a quote.
Okay.
I'm not inventing language, if you will. Verbatim from the decision. So if you're telling me, I will double, what I will do, Yap, is I will make sure that if it is a quote, that I include it as a quote.
Right, right.
And that I will note your comment regarding this.
And I want to prevent that the maintenance agency is seen in somebody who is willing to do TLDs as well.
Mm.
And some of the people in the maintenance agency has this tendency, so I want to tread carefully here.
Okay. Thank you, Yap. Was that it?
That's it.
Okay. I'll ask you to bring down your little hand on the Adobe Connect. All right, folks. I've been talking for almost an hour straight. I'm going to take a 90-second break before going on to the next one just to get a glass of water, rest my vocal cords for a sec, and then we will continue. So just 90 seconds, and I'll be right back.
And while Benny's gone, is everyone following okay the methodology and agreeing with the conclusions that we're coming to in each of these instances? Is everyone reasonably happy with it as a methodology and so on? Take silence as an indication of happiness.
It's Bill.
Hi, Bill.
I wanted to reiterate my earlier comments, which may be, which could be construed as proposing some slight changes in the methodology, but probably not overall.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think just while Bernie's getting his water, just my feeling is, we've got a limited time from here through to Brussels, and we have another call again next Thursday, and I think we need to be looking at finalising a document and a presentation for Brussels at our next meeting. So I'd really like to get any reasonably significant changes incorporated in the next day or two into this document. So any comments that anyone has relating to either the methodology or any of the decisions that we as a working group are making and determining that an item is significantly interesting or relatively interesting is quite important, that we have some degree of consensus on these issues.
All right, I'm back. Shall we continue?
Yes, please, Benny.
Okay. Section 9.KZ, Redelegation, July 28, 2005. What have we got here? Why are we looking at this? Well, this is the first example of no sponsorship agreement or MOU required to complete the redelegation, although the September 25, 2000 policy requiring these was still in effect. So, as far as I could tell, this was the first decision where the redelegation was completed. So we went through the mechanics of the analysis, change of policy or application of policy. Basically, if you go through this in detail, as we talked about it last week, it meets the criteria from the decision tree to support the classifying this as a change in policy. Did this meet the requirements? Given the date of the decision is July 28, 2005, you've got all the stuff that is applicable, which is basically the notice provisions, the core value provisions, and the fact that changes to policy should only come from the CCNSO. And given this decision came out of the blue and there was absolutely nothing, it's fairly straightforward to conclude that this should be classified as significantly interesting. There's a note in 232, the decision by the board to ignore its own policy without any explanations, thus implicitly changing policy, should be a concern to all ICANN stakeholders. There was really nothing. It was just like before this, sponsorship agreements and MOUs were required or you could not redelegate a CCTLD, and then this decision out of the blue, from this point on, they were no longer required, except for .eu, and I think Nigel pointed out on the list that the legislation allowing for .eu and management by your ID required it, and the decisions, discussions were ongoing when this particular decision was taken, so I don't take that as a huge change. There are some notes. As of 241, as of May 2010, the September 25th, 2000 decision on stable and proper agreements has not been applied. Every delegation or redelegation since the decision is technically in violation of this policy. 243, because of this policy limbo, the issue of those organizations that did sign agreements has seemingly been ignored by ICANN. I mean, you know, there's a policy on the books that says you need an agreement with ICANN, and all of a sudden we just stopped applying that policy, and then that leaves all those people who signed agreements with no transition path. If those people that have agreements today were redelegated, there would be no agreements required. So it's sort of one of those bizarre situations. The other point that's interesting is that IANA changed its requirements for CCTLD redelegations on its website in August 2005, removing the requirement for sponsorship agreements or MOUs without notice or explanation. This is not the first instance of such changes, which began with the posting of ICT1. The working group notes that significant changes in the IANA procedures applicable to CCTLDs, which could be considered changes in policies, should not be permissible without clear policy decisions by the ICANN board. Additionally, any significant changes in the IANA procedures applicable to CCTLDs should always be formally communicated to CCTLDs via the CCNSO and posted for a minimum amount of time so people know what's going on. I think for certain things IANA does that, but I think we've got several clear examples here where I think it sort of surprised people that you know, things just popped up once in a while. So there doesn't seem to be a clear process or a procedure for changing things that apply to CCTLDs, and I think that's a concern to the community. That's the end of that decision. I don't know if there's any thoughts, comments, or questions on Section 9.
Bernie, Patricio here. In point 1.1.2.1, Michael Palash writes the following 3 points. Is it really the U.S. principles on the Internet Domain Name and Addressing System that you quoted?
I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Patricio. So you're talking about 211?
I'm talking about 1121.
1121, yes, sir. 1121, coming back up. Okay, 1121.
Is it really the U.S. principles that he quoted?
No. I believe it depends which part you're talking about. This is a quote from the minutes of the board meeting.
Yes.
And I believe that he's quoting the GAC principles, if you're referring to governments have a legitimate interest.
Yes, but did he really say U.S. principles?
I cut and pasted that from the minutes, and I believe I've got them maybe in annex to this, so we can go have a look.
Yeah, no, I did check that, and it is what was in the minutes, and those were the verified minutes.
Right here. I believe it was just, you know, unclear the way he was. I took it to mean the GAC principles.
Okay.
But as you can see, this was clearly cut and paste from the minutes.
Yeah.
To Americans, the U.S. is is all government anyway.
It's actually referring to something different, and I've just posted the URL in the Adobe Connect. Excuse me.
Uh-huh.
Aha. Uh-huh. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you for the link, Kim. We'll be looking at that. Any other thoughts or questions here on Section 9? Okay, hearing none, moving along. The .gd redelegation from July 18, 2006. The issue being considered in this decision is the lack of local internet community support for the decision. Straightforward processing of this as per the methodology. Is this a change of policy or an application of policy? I think the best conclusion we can come to is that this implicit board decision not to require community support doesn't meet the key criteria, and it should be classified as an application of policy. Looking at did the application of policy get done properly? Given the date is July 18, 2006, we've got some new rules. The new ICANN bylaws from the end of 2002 have two new sections, making decisions by applying documented policies neutrally, objectively, and with integrity and fairness, and 9, acting with a speed that is responsive to the needs of the Internet while as part of the decision-making process, obtaining informed input. These were the core values. But number 8 is the one that we're interested in, by applying documented policies neutrally and objectively. So if we go through this, we've got a lot of stuff here, and I'm not going to read it over the phone. If you're interested in this one, I've tried to provide all the relevant bits within context. And as you can see, as we're scrolling through this, there is quite a bit of stuff, which leads to 2.4, a conclusion of, given this decision failed to meet some of the critical elements of the policies and bylaw requirements in effect at the time, it supports a classification of interesting by the working group. I think it's the best we can do on this one at this time. That would conclude Section 10. As I say, if you're interested, given that there is a lot of stuff that's posted there, you should go through it, and I'll be glad to take questions or discussions by email or offline. Anything else on Section 10? Okay. Moving right along, Section 11, the .um. Getting that really nasty static?
Yeah, it's someone's cell phone, I think.
Yeah, ooh, that hurt. So, the UM undelegation decision of January 16, 2007. Decision to remove .um from the DNS root that it be returned to unassigned status. This was the first removal from the root of an ISO 3166 code that did not change status under ICANN's watch. So if we put it through the mechanics, change of policy or application of policy, basically it's fairly straightforward. UM code did not change status. RFC 1591 does not have any mention of removing a ccTLD from the root, nor does ICP1, nor does the GAC principles. And there are no other policy decisions with respect to removing ccTLDs from the root prior to this point. So it goes quite quickly to a conclusion that it meets the first three criteria. And it's not obviously not applicable to all ccTLDs directly, even if it's a decision by one, but it is a precedent-setting decision. So we should classify it as a change to policy. Now, did it meet the requirements? The date of January 16, 2007 makes it eligible to all the current requirements for policy development if it had been done according to rules, and of course it met none of them. So the conclusion again is fairly straightforward that the working group has all the required elements to classify this as significantly interesting. There is a note. It is critical to note that the board has created a policy by taking precedent-setting decision without providing any of the deciding factors in its resolution. The precedent could then be interpreted as the board being allowed to recommend removing any ccTLD from the root and returning it to unassigned status. Such a situation should be unacceptable to the CCNSO and ccTLDs in general. Let's be clear, you know, the decision of removing .um was probably the right one when you're looking at this. But we're not, I mean, the ICANN board is not managing its own private property. It's working within a system, and this system is about policies and respecting them. And, you know, the allowing people to go very wide on some things, although they seem to make sense at the time, can also be the basis for supporting decisions that may be of great concern later on. I'm just trying to point that out in that one.
Can I just add my 2 cents?
Please.
So, you know, the UM case was the operator of UM asked us to remove the delegation. So we were acting on a request. It was authorized. The domain was empty. There was no one affected. So, you know, that's the 10-second version. I'm not sure that implementing the wishes of the current operator is necessarily outside the scope of historical practice.
As I said, you know, it fairly obviously the right decision to take, but clearly also undelegating a domain, a ccTLD, brings up some policy questions. And I've included the board minutes here. Any other thoughts or questions on the .um decision? Okay, moving along. .yu redelegation decision, September 11, 2007. So we're getting closer to 2010, folks, and we should be done in time. The .yu domain be redelegated to the Serbian National Registry as a in a temporary caretaker capacity. Now, again, there's no mention anywhere in policies that you can redelegate domains with special provisions. And basically, the core of what's going on here is that you're redelegating a domain, but you're not allowing them to take on new registrations, which is, you know, obviously breaking some new policy grounds. So it meets the criteria for being considered as a policy decision. All the current factors are applicable. There was none of them that were met. So it should be classified as significantly interesting. What's even more interesting, we've got Section 2.4, which is the quote from Peter Dengate Trush, which was applicable to this and the requirements for decommissioning .yu. I would invite everyone who's interested to read the minutes which are posted in Annex 1 of Section 12. Are there any questions on .yu redelegation? Okay. As you can see, the minutes were kind of long, and we're coming to the end of it. Make it a little quicker here. And it takes us to, section numbering error. Should be section 13, Q, retirement revocation requirements. There were some board decisions put conditions on decommissioning .yu, and we have to look at, we put this through the mill to see if this would meet the requirements. So if you go through this, you end up with a conclusion. The explicit decision by the board meets the requirements to have it classified as a change in policy, because there is nothing in RFC 1591 or ICP-1 about retiring CCTLDs, basically. If you consider this a change of policy, basically all the elements of policy decision at this point applied. There were obviously none of them that were followed, and therefore it becomes simple decision to support classifying this as significantly interesting by the working group. Pointing out the conversation between Peter Dengate Trush and the chair, it's noted that the chair noted that these practices have been in existence prior to the formation of the CCNSO, and that if policy is required in this area, that the CCNSO work on a policy proposal that might be properly considered. Given the bylaws in effect, as noted by Peter Dengate Trust, the chairman, at the Nairobi meeting, seems to be a little bit at odds with the bylaws in effect at the time. What we've got here is... Yes, I know it's duplication, but I included the minutes again just to keep it consistent per section. We've also got the IANA report as an annex to Section 13. Any questions on Section 13? Okay, almost there, folks. The BB redelegation, November 20th, 2007. Some formatting issues there. We've got our section numbers correct this time. What are we concerned about here? The redelegation application is noted as not meeting the technical requirements. This is the first documented redelegation to an applicant that does not meet these requirements. This is a change of policy. The conclusion is no, it doesn't seem to be a change of policy. Things are covered by existing policies. Policy application issues, let's have a look at it. I pulled out all the stuff that seemed relevant, and as you see, there's quite a bit of it. So when you finish having a read at all of this, we get to the conclusion that, you know, obviously some of the elements were respected, but not all. So we have support for the working group classification. As interesting. Sorry, this static is killing us. And we've got some notes here on operational and technical skills, which were pulled from various documents and community government support also. So, any questions on Section 14? All right. Moving right along. Section 15, the .AE reallocation. Community support not considered a factor in the redelegation. So basically, if we go through this, we've got some issues with that relative to the .GD decision that was analyzed previously. And basically, if a board consistently stops applying its policies, it should be considered a change of policy. So if we look at this one as a change in policy, basically it's got all the rules applicable to it. There were none of the requirements that were met, and that the working group has effective support for classifying this as significantly interesting. I would bring your attention to the note in Section 3, which brings out specific points from the minutes. And one of the directors having some concern about this very specific issue. And you've got the information there that I've pulled out. And I've also included the original and complete minutes at the end of the document for consideration, including the IANA report, and we've done it. That. Keith, over to you.
Thank you very much, Benny. No, that's great. I think that, you know, as everyone comfortable with the direction this document's taking, I want to be sure that we're developing consensus around it. So please, if you have any discomfort, speak now. Okay. Well, it's sounding to me like we have a document that's reasonably workable. There were a few typos and minor issues noted on the way through that will need a bit of doctoring. My view is that from here forwards, Bernie, could we ask you and Bart to start shaking this document and producing an executive summary that we could use as a presentation for the CCNSO members for Brussels?
No problem.
Excellent. And is everyone comfortable with that as an approach? I think this is a substantial document at, you know, over 100 pages, and it would be a big expectation to place on the country code managers for Brussels to devour the 100 plus pages and develop an understanding of of the approach. So I think we do need an executive summary which sort of highlights more in summary form where we're going with this document. So is everyone comfortable with that as an approach?
Yeah, I have just a comment on the question.
Patricia.
Patricia, yeah. I think it also needs a table of contents, so one could look there, know where to jump in to find the appropriate section.
Yeah, that was in the plan. Didn't have time to do it for this version.
Mm-hmm. And the question is, I suppose .us was redelegated at some time when Neustar was awarded the contract. Is that included anywhere in this document?
Not in this document, no.
Is there a reason for the omission?
I didn't pick up on this one. What's the date? Kim, do you have the date on the .us redelegation? I don't seem to remember seeing it in the IANA report.
There is no IANA report, and it was during the time that ICANN managed the root zone. So probably worthy of note. I don't have much more information than that. It was previous to my time.
Have an idea of the general date? I'll look at the minutes and.
If you search for the contract, I mean it was a contract that was assigned by DOC to NewStar. So I'm guessing if you Google for it, which I'm doing right now, I find
this was
February 13th, 2002.
Okay, I'll have a look at this.
And there is an announcement on 19 November 2001.
Yeah, I think there was discussion at the Melbourne.
This was at the NDR meeting. So the meeting of ICANN in 2001 in Marina del Rey,
Montevideo.
Yeah, Bernie, I think have an interesting time checking which of the requirements of the policy were met.
I will have a look at it, and I will report back.
Okay, and Patricia, thank you for raising the issue of .us, and that's another reminder to all members of the working group to spot the gaps in terms of this document. Are there any other decisions or aspects of any of the delegations or redelegations made that are not covered within this document, because again we want it to be quite a comprehensive list of the issues. Okay, well if everyone's reasonably happy with that as an approach, I guess the only other thing I have for this evening is just administratively looking at the Brussels meeting and this working group. I think we're scheduled to meet twice normally during an ICANN meeting, and I see no reason to vary that on this occasion. By meeting twice, it gives everybody an opportunity to attend at least one of the two meetings. And so I'm aiming for a meeting on the Sunday afternoon. That would be Sunday the 20th of June, and then a meeting on the Thursday, the 24th of June, for the working group. And obviously there is presentation time at the CCNSO where the working group will be reporting in. And as I understand it, Bernie, you're actually enabled to attend the Brussels meeting.
I will be there.
Excellent. I don't see why we should take all the flack on our own.
Oh, that's why I'm going.
Of course. Okay, unless there's any disagreement with those meeting dates and so on, I think we'll proceed to plan for them. And really that just leaves me a final opportunity to allow any comments from anyone in terms of anything relating to this working group. Is there anything else that anyone wishes to raise? No. Sounds good to me then. Our next meeting is Thursday the 27th of May, 2200 UTC. So thank you all for your attendance again and persevering with a long and detailed call. Please have your feedback on the list as soon as possible so we can start finalising this document and producing an executive summary. And we'll talk to you all again on next Thursday.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thanks.